Hey, it's Matt Pinfield here at the SoCal Sound, and I am here with Brian Blatz of Whitmore Law. It's so important to understand that you as a creative, as a musician, as a writer, anything that you do, you really need to know your rights and you know what belongs to you and how to proceed, because it can seem so confusing and just literally something you may want to avoid or procrastinate about, but it's so important. So I've invited Brian here to talk about it from Whitmore Law, because me being around musicians all the time and having friends that are musicians or songwriters for so many years, this has always been such an important thing, I think. And I think it's really great. I mean, you really have to have representation.
You do.
So you understand, you know, all not only the laws, but your rights. And so you have someone in your corner,
yeah,
really.
100%.
Someone who cares about music. And you are a huge music fan.
Yes,
besides being
absolutely
an entertainment lawyer, and you have been. So you understand, like, you have that sensibility of the artist because of your absolute love of it and working with them for so many years.
Absolutely. I have such an amazing respect for the artists. And that's one of the reasons why I was excited to do this today, is that I really wanted to feel like they have a voice, and there is a voice out there helping them protect their rights, because it is so important. They make the magic, and we want to protect that.
Absolutely, and I love that you do that. I mean, that's one of the things that I think why it's such a perfect fit. You know, Whitmore Law with SoCal Sound and the things that you do. And so let's talk about some of the,
yeah,
you know, those two fundamental types of protectable rights.
Right. Right.
Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, so there's really two that are basic. And I want to start by saying there's lots of nuances around anything that we speak about. There's different levels or different things you need to be thinking about. But the basics are two things. There's the sound recording, and then there's the composition. The sound recording really is the recording itself. Whoever's singing on the track, whoever's playing on the track, that specific sound recording is its own right in itself. And that's licensable, sellable, recordable, editable, you know, that has its own set of rights. And then you've got the composition, which is really the underlying lyrics, melody, the harmony, all of those things. Those are a completely separate rights category. And as you know, oftentimes recording artists don't write the songs that they sing. They don't write the lyrics. They don't write the music. Obviously, they don't play the instruments. So it's important to understand that if you're the person that is writing the music and then it's being performed by somebody else, you still have lots of rights related to that. Those are incredibly valuable rights. They need to be protected, and you need to protect them and realize that there's people that are going to be making money off of that, and make sure that you get your cut.
Absolutely. I think it's important. So how do people go about protecting those rights?
Well, I think it's really important that you want to understand how to register your rights when you're making something. Really, that's going to be U.S. copyright law that you're going to want to be thinking about. There is a U.S. copyright office. That can be challenging to go into and understand and go through. You can get frustrated very easily. So it's important to have, or at least be thinking about, legal representation on some level to help you with that. If not, it's not completely outside of the realm for you to do it yourself, to go in and at least start the process when you've written a song, to go in and protect your rights on the U.S. copyright site. Now, that being said, under general law, you're going to be protected anytime you create anything. From the time that you create it, it's yours. It's just harder to prove your rights that you own that if you don't register it with the federal government.
Yeah, it's really important, right? And it's also, you know, sound recordings as well are another part of it besides the writing, right? The
Absolutely.
Sound recording itself.
Yeah, the sound recording itself also needs to be copywritten and protected. And it's the same thing. When you sing a song, if you've performed it, you have rights, general rights, from the moment that you record it into infinitium. But the reality is that in order to really protect those rights, you're going to want to register that with the U.S. Copyright Office.
One of the other things I think that you've definitely seen, Brian, and you know, even as a guy who's out, you know, playing music for people and telling them about it, is that sometimes I think artists, you know, they don't really decide. Everybody who's involved, there's just more than one person playing an instrument or involved in the writing process.
Correct.
Or recording process of a song.
Correct.
They make the mistake of literally not really making that decision on who owns what and what percentage in advance of when some of these things take place. And it's much harder to really get through that and figure, sift through that.
Yeah.
And it gets a little crazier. It's why it's really important to do it up front, isn't
Absolutely. It? And it can be even worse than that. I mean, you might be in a position where God willing, you have an incredibly successful track that you want to release, and suddenly you realize that you can't because someone is claiming they have rights and they're not being represented and that they own a certain percentage. And any label or publisher that's involved is going to put the brakes on the project if they feel like there's any kind of legal risk that's related to that. And yeah. if you don't get that figured out ahead of time, to the best of your ability, and make sure everyone's clear on how much they own of whatever right you have, whether it's sound recording or a composition, you can run into problems down the road. Or like you said, you've been part of a process of making one of these songs or these tracks, and then it becomes wildly popular and you never receive any credit. You never receive any monetary compensation for that. I mean, the music industry is littered with people that have been involved in projects and been left out, and then find out down the road that, you know, their creativity is gone. It's been taken from them.
Yeah, and then, you know, somebody else is making money off their creation.
Their talent, yeah.
Yeah, and it's really unfair. So it's important to know these things and get proper representation so that they can...
Absolutely.
Makes the process easier. So you can be... Do what you do best, which is create. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I always say.
And that's the bottom line. I mean, you know, it's really hard to tell artists, stop doing what you're doing, which is creating the magic that we all love, and focus on, you know, legally protecting your rights and spend time on the website, the US Copyright Office, and figure out. I mean, they don't want to do it. We don't want them to do it. But the reality is it has to be done. And whether they want to do it themselves or they want to bring in someone to help them do it, it needs to get done, because God forbid down the road, you have success with this and you haven't protected it and you're exposed.
Yeah. And music history is littered with those stories.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of the message. I think the underlying message is that we want you to keep doing what you're good at, but we also want you protected so you get the benefit of your brilliance and the magic that you bring and the happiness that you bring into all of our lives. You should be compensated well for that.
Absolutely.
And it shouldn't just be other people that are being able to benefit from those things that you've done.
Yeah, and I also think it's really important that if you have, you know, representation with entertainment law, like what's being done with Whitmore Law as an example, and you, Brian, because you care so much about music, it also has, it's another way of like really being able to differentiate and hear another opinion on, you know, what sometimes the right things are to do. Because, you know, a lot of times we're not telling you not to trust your managers or
right.
or your label or somebody's a publisher or your agent, but it's
right.
really important that, you know, knowledge is power.
It is.
And also I'm feeling that you have somebody who really cares and will lay out everything very honestly for you. And I think that's one of the things that's great that you do.
Yeah, well,
you know?
I appreciate that. I mean, you know, it's like you said, I mean, you've got these different people that have different roles in an artist's life. They have those roles and they should be experts in those roles. That doesn't mean they're experts in other areas. So maybe they've heard something or they've read something about your rights. Doesn't mean they're experts at it. You really want somebody that just focuses on that one thing, particularly legal representation, because, you know, we're bound by our oath to being an attorney to represent you in the best way possible. And we're going to give you the best advice that's going to protect you. And not everybody that's involved with you in the creative process is going to be able to say the same. You know, they have their different agendas. They have their different reasons for wanting to be involved. And you really got to be careful and watch out for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely do. How does an artist monetize their music rights?
Yeah, so there's a number of different ways to monetize. The one that a lot of people know about is basically reproduction. It's also called mechanical. So that's someone streams it, they download it, they buy a vinyl version of it. That's a specific type of right that you can monetize. And every time that is done, money exchanges hands and the artist should be getting a piece of that.
Yeah.
Particularly like vinyl's been a big thing recently, as you know.
Yeah.
Vinyl can be very profitable. People pay more for vinyl than they do for a download, for example. And you've seen different bands, like say the Black Keys, that'll come out with like a pink vinyl album and
yeah.
it's a collector's item and they make more money doing that. And that's why they do it, because as you know, with Spotify and everything, the profit margins for the artists are so tiny and you have to have so many purchases of your individual music to make money. You've got to find other ways to do it. And reproduction is a way of doing that. Another way is sync rights. This is a great way to do it. There are actually sync specialists out there that will try to pitch your music for a movie or a commercial or a music video. You see it all the time. Everything we watch, any of the commercials you watch, that music came from somewhere. Yeah. Nine times out of 10, it's not produced or composed directly for that commercial or for that television show. They have to license it from somebody. That's called sync rights. And there are people that do that specifically. And that's something to remember as an artist. Your music may be perfect. Now, that doesn't necessarily, you still have the right to decide whether you want to, maybe you don't agree with the car industry. So you're like, no, I don't want to license my music for you to use it in a commercial. You have that right. But if you decide you change your mind and you want to do it, there's a lot of money to be made by licensing your music for different projects. And it's nice to, you really need to understand that too, because there are specialists out there that will go and pitch your music on a regular basis, and it'll get you in front of other music for films, television, production, all kinds of different productions.
Yeah, that's great.
Public performance. You've got radio played at a venue. Every time that your music is played on the air, there's a way to make money when that's done. There's a licensing amount that you get that's charged that you should be getting a piece of. And that's something to keep in mind also. That's even if they play it in the background in a bar. You know, somebody uses it on YouTube in a video. You have rights that are related to that, and those should be paid for. Every time your music is used, you should be getting paid for. And public performance is one of those rights.
Yeah, that's great.
The last would be derivative works, and that would be like remixes or sampling. You've seen that a lot in the hip hop community. Back in the early days, the music companies were freaking out about sampling. They didn't know how to license it. How do I do this? What do we charge? You know, it was a mess. And I have a very good friend that does this for a living, and she's called the Sampling Queen, and it's what she does. She helped set the precedent. She helped literally write the way the licensing is done these days to allow different artists to sample different music and put it into their music. And it's done quite frequently. And that's another way that you can monetize your music, is allowing it to be sampled for different artists to create different tracks out of what you're doing, or remix it, or make a cover out of it, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, it's happening. It's a pretty common practice.
Very common, very common.
You know, since the early days of hip hop too, you know, right?
Yeah.
And everything else now, and pop music and stuff.
Yep, for sure, yeah.
So when it comes down to it, one of the other things that's really great about what you do at Moore Law, Brian, and what you do especially too, is helping artists understand like the difference between labels, publishers, and those PROs, the performing rights organizations,
sure,
which end up collecting the money.
That's correct.
For the artist, which is so important.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, it is.
Tell me about those.
So let's talk about the labels first. Your traditional label deal, depending on, and there's lots of different, I mean, you name it, there's different label deals that can be done depending on what kind of deal you want. But fundamentally, a label deal, the label decides that they like what you're doing and they want to help promote you. And that's what this is all about. It's about promotion. Could you do it on your own as an artist? Sure. But how many venues can you play? How much can you tour? How much social media impact can you have? How many radio stations can you get on? It takes time. It takes money. It takes focus. It takes connections. It takes, you know, to know people to get your music out there. And labels know how to do that, and they do it very efficiently because they're your partner and they want to be successful along with making you successful. But in exchange for that, there's a price to be paid, and that price, it's changing, the industry is changing, but traditionally the way it works is you're gonna be signing over your rights. The rights that we talked about earlier in this conversation, you're gonna be assigning all of those rights over to the label. Sometimes in perpetuity, sometimes for a set period of time. And in exchange for that, they're gonna give you money. They're gonna say, for example, here's $1 million. Go and make your video out of this $1 million. Go tour with this $1 million. Pay whoever you gotta pay, pay yourself, do whatever you wanna do with this money. But by the way, this is a loan. This is not a gift. You have to pay us back. So that means you better make money on tour. Your albums better make money. You better promote. You better be on social media. We want to see TikTok you know, videos every single day or every twice a week.
Yeah.
We want you on Instagram. We want you to hire a social media campaign or use our people, which is also going to cost you, to run your social media programs. And we want you out promoting. And if you're able to pay us back the million, great. Then we've got splits after that. You know, we take 70, you get 30 of anything moving forward after that. Then we're ready to do another album. You're going to borrow money from us again, and you're going to make that album. That's traditionally how it was done. And it can be very difficult for artists because sometimes they'll lock you up for three albums.
Yeah.
And you don't like, you realize this isn't working for me. I'm not making any money and I'm killing myself.
And they're not making you a priority.
That's exactly right. They've got 100 other bands. And man, maybe you're popular one minute and you're not as popular the next minute, and you can't get them on the phone to help you figure out, well, strategy-wise, what do I do? Or why can't I get on the station? Or why am I not the opening band for pick a bigger band? You know?
Yeah.
Yes, it's difficult. And there's changes within these organizations. Someone in A&R that you met that really loves you might have moved on.
That's happened so many times.
So many
times. Where the person who's their champion there.
That's exactly right.
And they might have assembled a group of champions in the marketing department, in the A&R department, in the promotions. All of a sudden, there's a massive overhaul of layoffs, and there's changes. Or they move to another label, or the label changes.
And then suddenly your label that you're under contract with says, yeah, we're going to go in a different direction. You know, it's like,
meanwhile, you've recorded a record, it's a loan, so you owe them that money.
That's right.
And it ties up that recording.
That's right. Yeah.
And a lot of times it puts an immense amount of pressure.
It does.
In your life, you know, it just makes things very difficult.
I have a friend who's a composer, and his friend, he was telling me about, has had to work like three jobs because he did sign with the label. He did take the money. The album wasn't as successful as everybody hoped it would be, and they came calling. And he owed them money, and they literally put him on a payment program, and he was paying them off like a student loan every month, you know, and it was brutal. And he didn't have time to create anymore as an artist, which is to all of our detriment, because he had to work jobs to pay back the money that they loaned him to make the album. So
And that's a terrible place for an artist and a creative to be.
Awful.
And that's why it's so important to have representation, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
To make sure that, you know, that's those things that are in fine print, and everything is really detailed out, and you know.
Absolutely.
And someone who will actually spend time with you, who cares.
Yeah.
That's what I love about what you do, Brian, because you actually care. You can really take somebody through that. And this is only the tip of the iceberg of what people can learn. That's why they should give you guys a call.
Yeah.
One more, I'll call you. I think it's great. Now, we talked about labels. Let's talk about publishers, too, because publishers, that's another part where it can become a very important income stream.
Yeah, absolutely. So publishers focus on the composition side of the industry. So you're a songwriter. You're going to have a publisher. Let's say that you write a song with eight other people. All of them will have their own publishers that they've signed with. And these people, the publisher's job is to chase down when your music is used in all the different facets, all of the different rights that we've talked about, except for the sound recording side of it. And that's their job. They're not lending you money. They're not giving you money. They're not in marketing. They're not in promotion. They're simply there to chase down your money for you, because trust me, that's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah. Very time consuming.
Very time consuming.
And again, it's another thing that just takes you away from the thing that you love the most, and that's being creative.
Absolutely. And it takes time to learn even how to do it. They have algorithms that will chase down when different songs are used around the globe. And then they reach out to these different organizations that have used the music, you know, for a normal person to be able to figure out, A, how to do that, and then B, how to implement that, and then C, the time to chase it down. It's virtually impossible. So it's really important that you do have a publisher when you're in that realm. And also to remember that if you're a recording artist and you're not a writer, but you are in the writing process, and maybe you just add one word to a song, you're like, well, I don't like that. Let's tweak it. Can I say this in the creative process? You're suddenly part of the composition. You should get compensated, even if it's 1%.
Yeah.
It needs to be recorded. You need to have representation, and every time that song is played, because how many songs have we all heard a million times? Imagine getting 1% of the revenue from that song, that track, every time it's played.
Yeah.
It could be life-changing. You never know. So it's important to remember that as an artist also.
So Brian, performance rights organizations are so important right now because it's, you know, it's the way that people get paid for everything, you know, whether like you've said before, like, you know, syncs and how many times something is you know, streamed. And right. because the pie is so small these days for artists and people, a lot of them feel they're not getting paid what they're worth. And when they're touring, you know, gas is more expensive. Yep. Lodging is more expensive. It's a lot different.
Yeah.
Then, you know, when you and I were checking out bands coming up and they were all in their van. Right. Some people are still doing it,
yeah.
but it's very tough. So in order to make it worthwhile, it's really important that they have this organization who tracks so that they can get the royalties from this. So you want to explain to everybody what these performance rights organizations do?
Yeah, so PROs, as we like to call them, and that's what yeah. we call them in the United States.
Yes.
In other parts of the world, they call them CMOs, collective management organizations. The PROs in the United States are really there to collect your royalties anytime that your music is used in a public forum.
Yeah.
Whether it's on television, whether it's in a bar, whether it's publicly performed, whether a DJ uses it in their performance in a club. They're there to collect for you. And it's really important very early on to get registered with them and have one of them represent you. There's about four of them. I wouldn't say there's anything particularly, they would tell you that they're special in some different way, but I would say that as long as you sign up with one of them, they're going to be representing your interests and they're going to be chasing your money down anytime that your music is used in a public forum in that fashion.
Yeah, it's great. And I love the fact that there's opportunities to find out what's going on with that worldwide.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. And that's the other nice thing about like PROs is that they'll be connected with organizations in other parts of the world. So you don't have to go and sign separately with 50 different PROs or CMOs overseas to try to chase down the revenue that, you know, you should be getting from the tract when they're paid in a public forum. They do that for you. And then they give you a report that shows you where it's streamed, how long it's streamed for, how long it was played for, what's owed to you. And it just takes a lot of the guesswork out of it for you and the hard work that you'd otherwise have to do.
And once again, it gives you that opportunity to be free, to be creative and
exactly.
do the things you want to do, which
exactly.
is so important.
Yeah.
Digital distribution and streaming is always one of the things that you hear so many debates about. And you also, you know, a lot of people feel that artists are not compensated fairly. And there's got to be a way for them to understand how that is broken down, to put their mind at a little more of an ease, whether they, you know, agree with it or not.
Yeah.
But at least this way they protect it. And that's the other thing that you do with entertainment law is you know, you oversee and you let them, you really, it's educational besides actually doing the work to protect the artists as well.
Absolutely.
So talk to me about and explain digital distribution.
So digital
process.
Distribution is like, for example, Spotify or Apple Music or any of the different platforms out there that people buy their music from or download their music from, however they listen to it. And it can be challenging to get your music onto these platforms or get it on the platform in a meaningful way. So, you know, having an organization that you can sign with like a DistroKid or TuneCore, CD Baby, these are distribution companies and you can sign a deal with them and they're not getting any rights to your music. You're simply giving them a percentage of the sales. But what they do is they'll package your music up with other artists and then they will distribute the music onto these different platforms. And trust me, everybody thinks of Spotify and Apple and YouTube and there's a million different platforms around the globe that you're going to want to get your music onto because you don't know where it's going to hit and where it's going to be popular and where you can monetize it. And these organizations are experts at doing that. And a lot of times, if you're a smaller artist, what's nice about it is they will package you up with, let's say, Ed Sheeran's new album, you know?
Yeah.
They'll say, well, we're going to give you this, but we're also going to put this other artist on and we want you to promote this. So anytime anyone listens to Ed Sheeran's new track, it's going to recommend your music as a follow-up to that as something that they should check out. Incredibly powerful. It puts
yeah.
you closer to breaking out as an artist,
yeah.
which is what you want. I mean, with millions of songs being downloaded daily to Spotify, how do you break out as an artist? It's very difficult to do it on your own. It's very incredibly difficult. And this is a way to kind of get ahead in the digital distribution and streaming world.
Yeah, and it's important to know that. It's amazing, you know? And what if they register? Talk about Sound Exchange, and because that's a very important one, because I know that it, you know, somebody like Pandora or SiriusXM uses that, and I know that it's been very, it's one of the more lucrative ways for people to.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a similar, same thing. What it is it's a Pandora and Sirius are what they call non-interactive platforms, which means that you're going to listen to whatever they program that you're going to listen to, almost like traditional radio, except that it's a paid platform. You can't skip ahead. You can't pause. You can't, none of those things are available there. So those are different models from, say, a Spotify, where you can pick and you can create playlists and you can skip and pause and, you know, shuffle. You can't do this here. But those are still very lucrative models in the Pandora and their SiriusXM when they're playing your music, and you need to get compensated for that. And the way to do that is with Sound Exchange. You register with Sound Exchange, and whenever they use their music or use your music, you're going to be getting a percentage from that as a royalty.
Yeah, that's really important. Now, I got to say, one of the things that I'm asked about by bands, and I'm sure, Brian, you get the same thing, and it's really important. That's another reason why it's so important to get representation and become educated and have an ally there, like they do with you, Brian, and with More Law. Trademarking your name or your band's image or likeness, you know, all intellectual properties that have to do with that. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, that is something, once again, it's similar to what we said before, where when you create some content, you're protected under a common law for at the time of doing that, but you've got to go back and prove it. You've got to prove the time frame of when you did it, when it was used in commerce. Filing a trademark on your name, image, and likeness does away with that. You know, it streamlines it. So if there's a dispute, you're able to say, well, I got the trademark back, and, you know, pick a date. And it's easier to prove your case that someone has violated your rights related to that trademark. And with trademark, it's everything you could possibly think of. It's your face, it's your image, it's your logo, it's your brand, your band's name. It's everything you can possibly think of, a slogan that you come up with that's cool related to your band. The color scheme of your logo or of your band, all of those things, a concert poster, all of that is protectable, and you should be protecting it. And it also, you know, it also goes down to marketing. You know, you want to be able to use the things that you've created, your name, image, and likeness, and get paid for that, and not let anybody else use it. I mean, some other organization or individual shouldn't be able to take your name, image, and likeness to promote whatever product that they want to promote. Imagine that Apple just takes, you know, pick a band and says, hey, this band loves Apple. You know, and if you haven't protected your rights, they're just going to run off and do it, and they're going to make a bunch of money using your image. And maybe they'll make not only make money, but maybe you disagree with their business model, and you don't want to be associated with that business. And this is a way to protect that, is with trademark law.
Yeah, you know, it's really amazing, because I've had, you know, so many friends who are in bands, and they, you know, they end up, you know, having what they think is a name that they own, and no one else had thought about it. You know, because now more than ever, because things are done so globally, odds are, you know, it's pretty. There might be at least two or three of the bands of the same name, and sometimes 10. You will see that, you know, on a streaming platform like Spotify or Apple, and you're like, how many bands with that name? Yeah. Might be from all different territories. How does the artist check so they don't have to go through the whole deal of changing?
Yeah.
And what would you
recommend? I mean, you know, I've run into this recently. The place that I always start with is social media. I mean, start there. Go in and do a search on the name. Go on GoDaddy and see if the handle, the website, is available. How are you going to promote your band if you can't even get the name for a website? You know, good luck. Where are the fans going to go if you can't have a website with the name that you want? You'd be surprised. There's so many names that are taken. It's really hard to find something that's unique. And if you can't get the URL for the website, you're not going to get Instagram, you're not going to get TikTok, you're not going to get YouTube. You're going to, it's going to be difficult to be able to promote your band without, and so that is the very first place that you start. Now, the second backup to that is going on the USPTO site, which is a Patent and Trademark Office website.
Yeah.
And then you type in the name. It's a real easy searchable website. And go in and it'll give you a list of all of the different, chances are that name's probably been used, but it may have been used for farming products.
Yeah.
Or you know, some Korean barbecue place, you know, yeah. or some, you know, something along those lines, some technology out of Germany. So in those cases, normally you're still going to get the name, you know, or the logo or the image because it's not going to create confusion to the general public, to the consumer. And then, you know, and then you're going to want to register it as quickly as possible. That is also a process. It can be done individually. I don't always recommend it, but you can go in and follow the process and file it for yourself. But I would definitely be thinking about the social media first because there's no point in getting the trademark if you can't get all of the social media handles. It's not going to help you.
Yeah.
They're already out in the commerce stream.
Yeah. And then you're kind of flapping the wind, like, you know what I mean? You're just like, you know, there's...
Yeah, and you put all this time and energy into trying to create an image and a brand and a logo just to realize that we can't do it. I mean, we saw that with Lady Antebellum.
Yeah.
They ran into somebody that also used that name, and then they had to change their name.
The
that
was Lady part A, of my, right?
Yeah. I mean, you run into situations like that where someone's already using the name, and they may have used it before you. And look, you may be 100 times bigger than them as a band, but it doesn't matter. They used it before you, and they have certain rights, and they can try to block you from using it. You know, so it makes a lot more sense to try to do that research ahead of time and get that done.
Yeah, very important to do that. I've noticed it saves people a lot of headaches.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the great things here, I got to say, Brian. It was just to spend time with you. And this is the tip of the iceberg, but I think what's really important about Whitmore Law and why it's just like I recommend it to... Really, to anybody, and you, Brian, because you have a great way of explaining and communicating, and you care. And I think that's, it's so important. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I mean, you know, I know that there are so many bands I've known throughout the years that I think if they had decided to get representation outside of just the very first person that, you know, their friend they decide to work with them and the first person that shows interest in their music, because, you know, people don't know. They're young, they're creative,
right.
And they're just trying to... But it's so important to have the foresight when you can and know that it is not only obtainable, it's not totally unaffordable. It's something that's going to save you money in the long run, be very important to your future. Because, man, it's just those lost opportunities that I've seen bands have where they lose a right to their music or the recording.
That's
or they have no say on how it's used.
That's correct.
Those things are all really important today because things are moving so fast. There's so much information out there.
Yeah.
And
And I think to add to that, I think that as a band, you got to understand that you're also a business.
Yeah.
And you need to make investments in your business, just like any business makes an investment in its business. And protecting your rights as a business is one of the very first things you should be thinking about doing as a business. You know, you don't want to create a product that you can't protect and then someone else is going to take that product and go sell it. It's the same thing. You're creating something that has a tremendous amount of value and can be very well monetized. You don't want someone else to go out and monetize it and then you don't get the benefit of that.
Yeah, it's very important. Brian, I want to say how great it is to have you here. Thank you for coming by because it really... I learned just hanging out with you. And when we have these conversations, there's a lot of things that you cleared up and I find very interesting. I mean, I worked at record labels and,
right.
You know what I mean? I worked in music programming. So there were all of these things that, you know, you had to literally think about from every aspect. You know, having been, you know, a programmer and music director, just, you know, seeing how that played out and, you know, how it was the correct way to end up, you know, paying for the plays that you do, but also, you know, just when you sign an artist, you know, you want them to believe and trust in you.
Right.
And it's important to know and try to protect that artist and work with them. But first and foremost, they've got to do it for themselves.
They do.
And they've got to
They do.
And they've got to have a friend on their side.
They really do.
Somebody who's knowledgeable, loves music, and cares about it.
Exactly.
Whatever that creative thing is, if it's music, if it happens to be, you know, if you're writing a screenplay, if you're, I mean, it's just so many different things, but they all have to be.
Yeah, anything creative, anything of content, you need to understand that what you're creating, and one of the reasons why I love music so much, is what you're creating is special. Not everybody can do this. This is a very special, unique talent that you have as an artist, and you can't minimize that. You should protect that. You should cherish that. Yeah. You should be compensated for it. Not everybody can do what you do, and that's a special thing.
Yeah, and you bring so much joy
absolutely
to people through music when you're an artist and a creative, that you deserve to be compensated 100%. Correctly and protected. It's yeah. most important.
And Matt, you and I have talked about this. I mean, like everybody on this planet, music, it just touches you in special places emotionally. Because, you know, you can listen to a song and it'll take you back to some memory that you had or some concert that you went or a boy or girl that you dated it's so powerful that way.
It
and
is.
It can bring the emotions and that's just something to be cherished and celebrated.
Absolutely. And we want to make sure that those people that whose music's brought you so much joy and happiness and companionship and just that other voice that's speaking for you when you can't come up with the words, but those lyrics speak about exactly how you feel.
Absolutely.
Is the most important thing in the world. And it's, you want to see them do well.
You do.
You want to see them.
You absolutely do.
That's why this is so important.
Yeah.
Brian, thanks so much for doing this with us today.
Absolutely.
Great to have you come by and hang out here at the SoCal Sound. And we're glad to have you as part of the family here.
I love it. Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan. I always have been. And I'm happy to support in any way I can.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Brian Blatz, everybody. It's Whitmore Law. We're hanging out at SoCal Sound. I'm Matt Pinfield. And if you're an artist, if you're a creative, so important that you protect your rights and you know about them.
Whitmore Law, dedicated to supporting and assisting performers, songwriters, producers, composers, and all music professionals in every endeavor.